Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today as we focus in on protecting your trees and shrubs from cold weather. A couple of guests back with us today. Kevin Schesso, one of them, the Ag Development Educator for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn Counties. Kevin, good to have you back.
No, it was always a pleasure, Larry. Good to be here.
And with us as well, Diana Alpha. Diana, the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. Diana, good to see you as well.
Thanks, Larry. Happy to be here.
So as we talk with these experts, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about your garden and maybe winterizing your garden and your trees and shrubs? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Diana, maybe start with you. You know, here we are going into kind of winter, but I'm wondering, what's the condition of our plants as we go into winter in your neck of the woods? You're kind of in the northern part of the state.
Well, we're in the west central, the far western part of the state over here, just near the Twin Cities. And we've been in severe drought for most of the summer. We're really low on soil moisture. So I think that means that our trees and shrubs and perennial plants are kind of on the stress side going into winter. I shouldn't say going into winter because they went into winter overnight with this front that came through and it was in the low 20s today. I'm not sure how this is going to affect things. I'm a little concerned that some of these perennial plants and woody trees and shrubs maybe aren't fully hardened off, because that's usually a gradual process. But with it being so warm lately, I think, you know, there was activity still going on in those stems and buds and stuff. And now it's hit really cold and it's going to stay cold. So between the drought stress and that, I'm a little concerned that maybe next year we're going to have some symptoms showing up.
Is that the same for you, Kevin? You're further north.
Well, of course, yeah. We're a little closer to Canada than Madison, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, we're up here in the northwestern part, and our temperatures have certainly turned winter-like, and they will be for the next 10 days forecast here. So we had a nice shot of rain, and hydrating our plants going into winter is going to be really critical. So we got almost an inch of rain here in the last 2 days. So we always recommend, if you have the opportunity to water and still can get the hoses out there, if that's the way you do it, giving plants a little extra drink of water going into winter right up until the time the ground freezes is what we suggest. So Mother Nature did that for us here the last couple of days, at least in this part of the state. So yeah, every year is different, and nature has to adapt just like we do. So
yeah, absolutely.
We shall see.
Well, Diana, what are some problems winter weather causes? Let's talk about young trees just to begin with.
Well, you know, here in Extension, we get a lot of questions throughout the year of plant problems. And often, you know, one of our biggest questions is trees that are suffering. They're either dying back or not growing well. And very often it relates back to some kind of wound on the trunk of the tree that happened when that tree was young. And so big, mature, established trees, there's not much you need to worry about with them. They're adapted. But if you've planted younger trees in the last 4 or 5 years, the bark on those trees is pretty thin. And it's not only tasty to wildlife like voles and rabbits, but the tissues can also be damaged by what's called sun scald. And that happens mostly later in the winter, in February and March, when the sun is starting to get stronger again. But the air temperature can be very cold, especially at night. And what happens is the sun warms the bark and the trunk on the south or southwest side, and the cells underneath will actually start breaking dormancy and become active. And then, you know, it's a crystal clear sunny day and the sun goes down or behind a building and the temperature plummets and those cells burst. And then you get a big wound on the trunk. And that wound is there for the rest of the life of the tree. And if it's bad enough, once the tree starts getting older, it's a break in the connection between the roots and the canopy of the tree. So you can start getting dieback and poor growth and lopsided trees and that kind of thing. So if people have young trees that have thin bark on it, there's still time to get out there and wrap those trunks. We need to wrap it all the way up to the lowest branch. Ideally, you use something that's white because that reflects the sun off, because the sun also reflects up off of the snow onto that trunk, and that makes it even worse. So something white, there are commercial things out there that you can get to like spiral or corrugated plastic things, and get those on the trunks now. And then you take them off in like April once things start warming up. And so then the trunk can expand. But really, really important that you protect those trees until the tree is big enough and the bark starts getting corkier, then it'll insulate the inner tissues on its own. But if you've got a young tree with thin bark, and again, that's like 4 to 5 years after planting, you need to wrap them every year.
Mm. Kevin, a friend of mine has on his home a young tree, and he asked me about it. A buck deer literally took the bark off all the way around that tree. He said, "Is there any hope?" And I said, "No, you put a fork in that one, it's done." But wildlife damage is, you know, is always a concern at this time of year, especially with deer.
Oh, yes, it is. And this is the joys of gardening in Wisconsin. And you don't have to be up north or in a rural area to experience wildlife in Wisconsin. As we know, there's all kinds of wildlife in urban areas, including deer, that can cause these kind of damages. So, yeah, when we talk wildlife, and I know you've had David Drake on in the past, and he's a wonderful resource for us. He knows all the biology and wildlife kinds of questions related to that. But when I talk to people about this subject, we really have to go right to the physical barriers to deny access to our shrubs and trees as best we can within reason, because, you know, you can spend an awful lot of money with fencing on deer fence, whether it's electric or, you know, steel mesh, and it looks hideous in some cases. But that's really the only way you're going to prevent some of this damage, is to keep them away. And that's our challenge, is how do we do that in our landscapes? But if you've got a high-value tree and you want to protect it, that's really something you got to consider, especially if you know you've got the deer running around. Mice and voles and rabbits, you know, they're another concern. And hardware cloth, those grow tubes are some of the physical barriers to help with sun scald, will also be a physical barrier for some of our damage caused by those rodents. But at the end of the day, I guess it's a balance, right? We all like the wildlife. We want to see the rabbits hopping around. And yet we know our plants are subject to their feeding. So if you've got a young tree, like Diana said, now is the time to really protect that tree or shrub, so at least it has a chance to fend off the wildlife later on in its life. So physical barriers are really the only way we can go.
Yeah. And Diana, shrubs, Kevin mentioned shrubs. Anything more on shrubs and maybe relating to wildlife or anything else for that matter?
Yeah. If you have a lot of shrubs, you know, sometimes it's kind of like when you do your landscape design, you choose shrubs that are not as tasty to rabbits as other things are, and that might be, you know, the start of it. But as Kevin mentioned, some kind of physical barrier, even though it maybe isn't that attractive in winter, you're going to be happy that you did it. So maybe chicken wire to keep rabbits away. You can wrap shrubs in burlap. Just remember that you need to go up as high as the snow level is going to go, because as the snow goes up, so goes the bunny. And so they can get up to much taller shrubs. One year the snow was so high, and in spring I was looking at eye level rabbit damage, and I'm over 5 feet tall. So be prepared for that. There are repellents that are out there, or homemade repellents, like things with garlic and cayenne pepper and stuff like that. And if you've got too many shrubs to get out there and put fencing around, you can try that. But just remember that with repellents, they do evaporate. They wash off if it rains. They need to be reapplied, and they usually need to be rotated, because it seems like rabbits and other wildlife learn to kind of hold their nose and eat it anyway if they're hungry enough. So using a variety of different repellents might give you a little bit of protection. But, you know, if it's a tough winter and the rabbits don't have any other food, they will get out there and eat it.
Some emails here. Jessica emailed to ask how to overwinter a hydrangea. Does she cut it back, cover it, or leave it?
Well, there are different kinds of hydrangeas out there. So that's kind of the first step to know. Some of them bloom on new wood, meaning new shoots that come up in the spring and will grow and then flower. Others, especially in the southern part of the state, there's a hardiness issue there with ones that bloom on old wood. And so that you wouldn't want to prune away. So if you don't know what you have, if maybe you've moved into a new house or you don't know what kind of hydrangea you have, my suggestion would be to just leave it through the winter. It's not going to hurt anything to leave it. If you've got flower heads on there, they're kind of interesting to look at in winter snow anyway. And then next year, see what happens. Once the new growth starts, you'll be able to tell if it's budding out above ground on old wood or if it's died back all the way to the ground. And then you can just remove anything that's dead, and then you know what to do for the future for that particular plant.
Deb in Plymouth emailed, they planted blueberries in large tubs. And then they pulled them into a shed last winter. And when they went to pull them in, roots had gone through the bottom into the ground. They either need to cut the roots or protect them somehow. What do you guys recommend for that?
Well, anytime we grow plants in containers, you know, we are limiting the space that those roots can explore. And, you know, depending on the size of the plant and how big it wants to be when it grows up, so to speak, those containers really provide some limitations for us. They're convenient for a lot of reasons. We can amend the soil to be just the way we want it. With blueberries, we know they like an acid soil. So if you're in a very high pH basic soil like we have in the southeastern part of Wisconsin, growing blueberries can be a real challenge in the ground. So a lot of times we recommend, well, put them in a container so you can amend the soil, get that pH just right. So containers definitely have their advantages. But one of the disadvantages, of course, is just like this emailer explained, is, you know, those roots, they want to explore and find nutrients and water. And if there's a slit or a hole, you know, they're going to sneak out and access more nutrients and water as a result. And when we're moving those for winter, you know, they can be almost like a coffin in the fact that if those roots are exposed to too cold temperatures, we got to be aware of that as well. So, you know, container plantings over winter, I really like to see them maybe buried partway into the soil. Or you stack them all together and you just bury them in wood chips and then cover that with leaves or some other kind of mulch. But you got to keep in mind, what were we just talking about? If you do that too soon, you're going to invite some of those critters to find home in that mulch for the winter too. So they like that nice warm winter habitat, just like we're trying to do to protect the roots. So if you're moving them inside into a shed, they're obviously protected from some of the winter. But, you know, plants are plants. They're going to do what they need to. And I don't think there's any harm in those roots going through. But just know over time, those roots are going to be needed to be fed nutrients. They're going to need to be watered more frequently. But, you know, putting them into a shed and giving them winter protection is certainly a good thing to do, because if that root ball gets exposed to really cold temperatures, you're going to start seeing root death. And that's why we want to protect them. So,
yeah, absolutely. Kevin Chesso, Ag Development Educator for UW-Madison Extension in Burnett-Sawyer in Washburn County, and Diana Alfeth, the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County, our guests today. Questions for them, you can give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly, actually. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Diana Alfeth and Kevin Chesso. Kevin's the Ag Development Educator for Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn Counties. Diana is a Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. And glad to have them with us. You can email questions at ideas@WPR.org or phone in at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. How do you recognize winter damage when spring comes around, by the way? I'm sure there's some dead branches or whatever, Diana.
Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes we can't recognize winter damage until later in the season. So, for example, if sometimes, especially again on younger trees, if it gets really cold, we can have damage to the vascular system underneath the bark. So the vascular system is where water goes from the roots to the top of the tree, and or carbohydrates go from the leaves down to the roots. So if the trunk is damaged by cold injury, very often the tree will still leaf out or even flower if it's like a crabapple, something like that, because there's enough energy stored in those buds to leaf out. So you think everything is fine and dandy. Even if you see rodent damage, like the rabbits have girdled, chewed the bark all around. The tree you mentioned where the buck rubbed the bark off of it, that vascular system might be totally broken, but there's enough energy in those buds up at the top of the branches that it still leaves out. So you think, oh, good, everything's fine. You know, that rabbit damage isn't as bad as it looks, but it is. And then usually come around middle of June or so, when the weather is getting warmer and there's more moisture being lost and the leaves need more moisture, they can't get it from the roots, and then the tree will just kind of collapse down. So whether the damage is from sun scald or rodents or deer or cold injury, sometimes we don't see it until later. If it's actually buds or flower buds that were killed by the cold at the tips of the branches, they won't leaf out in spring. And so sometimes the best thing to do is to just give the plant time and wait until, late June, early July, see what is leafed out and alive, and then just prune away the dead stuff. And then hopefully the plant, especially if it's a shrub, will be able to recover from that. But it takes a while for winter injury to show up the next growing season.
Hmm. Julie in Eau Claire has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Well, I've got a question about volunteer young white pine trees. They're like, I'd say, 5, 6, 7 years old. And all of them, and I mean all of them, and this isn't any deer damage, a little more than halfway up the tree, and they're very pretty white pine trees, but there's a bare spot, the trunk. It's like 1 or 1.5 feet. nothing growing in that part. And then it starts again on the top. And like I said, this is like 100 trees and not in just one location either. And what's going on there?
Well,
It could it be related to the snow line? Sometimes I think about what's exposed during the winter that could be damaged from just being exposed. And if we get a consistent snow depth, the lower portion of those trees is protected. And then there's this zone, just like Diana said, the bunnies move up with the snow line. And is there something that is correlated to maybe snow depth?
Yeah. One way to look at it. Anything else, Diana?
Yeah, I'm wondering, is this just like a big gap between branches? Is that what it looks like?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think all that's just normal. And I think what happened is every year with pines, that those candles come out on the ends of the branches or at the tip, and they will expand a certain distance depending on growing conditions. So if they have a lot of moisture and conditions are right, those candles will be longer one year than they will another year if it's drought stress. So I think that the year you can age a pine tree based on those branches. So every branch is a year. So that big gap is just a lot of growth that growing year between those branches. Or it just stretched that much further. And so it's nothing to worry about. It's just natural. You had a great growing year. And that's why they all kind of have it. And at that same level. And it'll just, you know, as the tree gets bigger and stuff, you won't notice it as much, but it's just the growing conditions that year. It's just like, you know, when you were in second grade and you learned about tree rings, and when there's a big growth year, you know that it was good growing season. I think you've just got a big gap in those, they're called internodes, in between those branches because it expanded a lot that year, which was a few years ago.
There you go. Thank you so much, Julie, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's see. Dave and Verona, we'll go to you. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I've got a simple question, and it relates to wigilias. And I'm wondering, can I cut those back in the fall and then expect them to flower in the spring? Or when is the best time to cut them back?
You can cut them back in the fall. You will get flowers next spring. You won't get as many flowers because they tend to form their flower buds on new growth. So the flower buds in most cases they're kind of in-betweeners. Some flower buds form the year before, but some form in the spring because they don't bloom until like later in, you know, as summer gets going and stuff. So I think, yes, if you prune them now, you're going to lose some flowers, but you'll still likely get a little bit of flowers next year.
There you go. Thanks, Dave. Jeffrey in Thiensville, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. So we've have a number of annuals that we've planted over the spring and early summer into pots, and they just grew like crazy. We had a wonderful summer with so much color, and these plants are so alive and vibrant. Is it better to cut them back and put them in a basement where they're hiding for the winter, or is it better to keep them going and put them in a room with lights, tree lights over the winter? Or what? How best to try to keep those going and then repot them again in the spring?
Well, that's going to kind of depend on which plants they are, which annuals they are. And remember that annuals mean that they complete their life cycle in one year. So they set seed, they grow, they flower, they set seed, and then they die.
Jeffrey said geraniums.
Okay. So geraniums are actually a perennial that we grow as annuals here because of the cold weather that we get, and they freeze out. So you can do it both either way, whatever works best for you. You can, with geraniums, you can let them go dormant in a darker area, or you can keep them growing as a houseplant, trim them back a little bit, give them good light. So we're talking about like at least a south window, maybe even some supplemental light. There's a lot of great LED plant lights available now that you can extend the day length and the intensity of the light. They'll likely not look as great indoors as they did outdoors because of light conditions and other growing conditions, but you can limp them along, get them to about March or so. Don't feed them now. Don't give them fertilizer now because they won't be putting on growth. They won't utilize that fertilizer. Keep them watered after the surface of the soil starts to dry out. So don't keep them too wet. And then in about late February, early March, you can prune them back, give them some fertilizer. They'll start responding to the longer day lengths. And then you can get them ready to be repotted up for putting them outside again next year. So kind of depends on your situation and what resources you have available, if you want to let them go dormant or if you want to keep them going as a houseplant.
Yeah, there you go, Jeffrey. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Devin in Onalaska, your turn now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you. I've got a newly planted 5-foot dappled willow, and I'm just wondering how to protect that against like a heavy wet snow. It looks like a pretty fragile tree to wrap in burlap, but I don't know if there's any other better options or not.
Hmm. Kevin, what do you think?
Well, obviously, when you don't have a nice stout trunk to support the tree, it's going to be much more prone to flopping over from, you know, if we have heavy wet snows or ice storms, that's when we really have concerns with some of those weeping and thinner branched young trees. And I'm assuming this willow would be right in there as far as its susceptibility to that. And you said how old was it? About 5?
Yeah, it was planted in May.
So this is a case where, you know, you might want to try staking it and providing some support just to kind of hedge your bets in case there might be, some threats from, you know, that ice storms or just, you know, heavy wet snows. So providing some staking on that would be my suggestion. We really don't want to go out there after an ice storm and be rattling around on that tree too much because you could damage the tree from, you know, that physical shaking. But obviously once it's laying flat, that's not good. So I would be prone to just putting in some stakes and providing some support. You know, there's a couple different ways you can do that, either with a single stake or with two stakes and then providing some kind of twine. We definitely don't want to put a strap around there that's or a wire that's going to dig into the trunk. So just be mindful of that. But some kind of physical support would be, I guess, my suggestion.
There you go, Devin. Thank you very much for calling. And on to Ellen in Melrose. Hi, Ellen.
Oh, hello. I was wondering if you could winter coleus in your house.
Can you overwinter coleus in your house?
You can. And you can kind of do it similar to the geraniums as far as keeping them as a houseplant goes. Sometimes there are some beautiful coleus out there. So I fully understand you wanting to overwinter them and get them again next year. One of the best things you can do with that coleus, though, is actually propagate it and take some cuttings and start some younger baby plants, because that big plant is going to get kind of lanky, especially indoors in lower light conditions, and it's not going to fill out and be as beautiful next year outside. So if you take stem cuttings off of them, you can root coleus really easily just by even putting them in water, but you can use some moist sand or perlite or other ways, but you can take little cuttings off of those stems, and you can do that now, and then you can get them rooted and growing, and then in March you can pot them up and put them outside in once the weather gets nice, and yes, you can definitely overwinter your coleus.
There you go, Ellen. Thank you very much for calling. Tom emailed to ask if it's okay to trim the lower branches of his blue spruce. They're mature trees, and the low branches are dead with no needles.
Well, that's unfortunately that we lost those lower branches. I'm a big advocate of when we grow spruce, try to maintain those lower branches. They sweep down to the ground. I mean, that's their natural form and habit. I've seen a lot of people make Christmas trees on popsicle sticks out of some of our spruce because they want to get rid of those lower branches so they can get under there with the mower, which is fine. I mean, to each his own. But in this case, if the branches are already dead, they're probably not going to regrow and fill in and have a nice looking, you know, sweeping form that we'd like to see. So if the tree branches are dead and dying, that's one of our recommendations for pruning is we prune out dead and broken and diseased branches. So in this case, I guess, you know, if the tree really doesn't have a lot of those lower branches, go ahead and trim those up. It might visually be more appealing. And anytime we have broken and diseased branches, we should be getting rid of them anyway. So just cut them back all the way to the trunk, you know, right at the collar. Don't leave stubs. You know, if you leave a stub, you might get a adventitious bud that breaks and you could get a little branching happening if that's something you want to do, but it's going to look a little bit odd. So I'd go ahead and just remove those dead branches. I don't know if you have any comments on that, Diana.
Yeah, the thing is, if it's a Colorado spruce, it most likely has rhizosphere and needle cast, which is a fungal disease that affects the needles. It starts at the bottom of the tree, works its way up. The inside of the tree works its way out. So that might be what's killed off the needles on those lower branches. So just be prepared that that's going to continue and work its way up the tree. So go ahead and cut out anything that's dead for now, but just be prepared that eventually you'll probably want to cut down that whole tree because the whole tree is going to look ugly.
All right. Mike in Wonder Lake, Illinois emailed to ask if it's okay to trim branches from white and red oak in fall. And when is the best time to do this?
Yeah, and the thing is that with oak, we don't want to prune during oak wilt season. And oak wilt is spread by a sap beetle. It's a little beetle that comes and drinks the sap that oozes out of a new wound on the tree. And those beetles are mostly active in spring and into midsummer, but I don't trust them. So I don't know that they read those books. And so my recommendations are always to wait until after we've got freezing weather, and then those beetles will not be active. So right now, absolutely, I don't think those beetles are active. So now till like beginning of April would be the time to prune them. And so, yeah.
I have at it.
Exactly.
Amanda.
Yeah, dormant. Pruning when the trees are dormant is really our best. It's always our recommendation, right? So this is when the trees are pretty much, you know, Illinois might be a little different than northern Wisconsin, but for the most part, leaves have fallen off. The trees have gone dormant. You know, good time to prune. Yeah.
Amanda emailed to ask if you have any recommendations about how to care for a black lace elderberry shrub. Hers in the Madison area gets full sun, has been growing into an awkward shape and not flowering. She's wondering if that might be due to cold injury.
Well, I think black lace should be plenty hardy down there, so I don't think it's likely cold injury. if it's kind of growing into a awkward shape and stuff, you can go ahead and do some pruning on there to shape it and make it more attractive. You said it's got full sun, so that's usually the first thing we look at for not flowering. I'd also, just make sure that you're not pruning flower buds off. So if you have been doing any kind of pruning, the timing is an important thing. And then my other question is how old it is, because very often it takes a few years for a newly planted tree or shrub to get established and get mature enough to start doing flowering. So those would all be things that I'd want to look at there.
Josh in La Crosse, it's your turn. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I've got some, I hope I'm listening to the right show, but I've got some silver maples in my backyard, and they get these big root kind of knobs that stick up out of the yard. And I've seen lots of videos of people cutting those off, but never a follow-up of whether it killed their tree or not a year down the road. Can you do that?
Yeah,
silver maple, they're kind of in the popple family. They will send up root suckers, and they're all attached to the mother tree. So this is a common occurrence, and where we have them in a lawn setting, it's really annoying because, of course, you know, you get these little sprouts come up and you either whack them off with the mower or you go and prune them off, and then they go ahead and they resprout. And you do that for a couple years, and now you've got this knot, this like gall that formed at the base of all those prunings, and now you run across the lawn in bare feet and you find all those things. So I'm not a real big fan of the silver maple in the lawn landscaping setting for that reason. You won't kill the tree. You're going to just keep encouraging those sprouts. And I don't know, Diane, if you know why those sprouts occur in some cases and not in others, because I have seen silver maple that don't do that. And in other cases, you know, they do. So that's just the characteristic of that tree. And I had one in my backyard, and I removed it for that very reason. I just didn't like all those root suckers.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just the roots themselves that kind of come up to the surface and they get fatter and fatter, and then you whack them with the lawnmower and they're not actually sprouting, but the roots are just becoming real visible. And so some people do go in there and try to cut that root off, but that might be a big root on that tree, and it could affect the tree depending on the situation. So you can put a little bit of soil over that to smooth it out and make it so that you're not hitting those roots when you mow the lawn, but just enough to barely cover the roots. And you might have to do that again in 10 years if they do it again. And, you know, smooth it out. But yeah, I agree with Kevin. Silver maples, you know, they're fast growing trees. They're big trees. They're not super strong trees. So you really have to evaluate if it's the best tree for your landscape setting.
Thanks very much, Josh. And Marilyn in South Range, we'll go to you. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have a Honeycrisp apple tree that have almost like non-productive suckers towards the bottom of the tree. And I was wondering if I could prune them out now or should I wait until later?
You can prune them now or anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those suckers coming up from the base, they might be coming up from the rootstock even, so they might not even be honeysuckles. But pretty much on apple trees, anything that's growing straight up hardly ever flowers or sets fruit. So you can prune those out of there. They'll keep regrowing, kind of like Kevin said, that sprouts tend to keep growing. And just prune them out when they're young and small, and any time of year.
All right. There you go, Marilyn. Thank you so much for calling. By the way, I wanted to mention Extension, UW Extension, is doing a little survey of what you learned during the show. And I want to mention that it's just going to take you about 2 minutes to fill it out. You can go online to WPR.org/Larry and just go to today's date. There's a link in our program notes, actually. And they also are interested in future shows for Garden Talk. So what you've learned today and then what future shows that you might be interested in having us do for the show. Again, just go to WPR.org/Larry and then click on the link on the program note. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk and the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Diana Offuth and Kevin Shesso. Kevin, Ag Development Educator for Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. Diana is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. Questions for them, give a call at 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. We had a question relating to hydrangeas earlier, and Paula in Rhinelander emailed that dried hydrangea flowers make great snowman hair.
Well, that's a great idea.
I like that idea, and Paula's in Rhinelander, so she gets plenty of opportunities to have snow for snowmen. Charlie in Menominee, Michigan, emailed. He uses sections of concrete reinforced wire to protect his trees from deer. It rusts very quickly and blends in well. The enclosure is 6 feet high, 5 feet to 6 feet in diameter, and he adds that hardware cloth on the bottom, 24 inches, he uses to protect from voles and rabbits. So he uses concrete reinforced wire.
Yeah, like a Fort Knox. Sometimes we have to go to those extremes.
Well, he's in
concrete wire mesh is very useful. Find another use for that stuff because it makes for good trellising cages for tomatoes too.
Yeah,
or other trellising.
It does indeed. And Charlie in Menominee, Michigan, probably has no shortage of deer. Tom in Pierce County, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I got wild grapes that showed up in my yard. I mean, it's a 10-year, and first 6 years I was trying to kill it. And then 2 years ago I decided that wasn't working, and I just put up a trellis for it. I got 3 quarts of wild grape juice off it this year. I was talking with my brother-in-law, and he says, yeah, I should be able to trim that back, and it'll come back maybe better than
that. Yep.
Yeah, grapes are one of the more challenging fruits to grow, in my humble opinion. I've been growing them here at the Spooner Ag Research Station for over 25 years on trellises, of course. But grapes, because of all that vigor, we really need to think about how we're going to support that growth. So I'm assuming you have some kind of fence or trellis or some support that they're climbing up and over to, you know, maintain their whatever form that the plant wants to be. But when we think about pruning grapes, we have to remind ourselves that most of the fruit and the fruit buds are in one-year-old canes. So we want to be pruning out that older growth, the stuff that's got woody, you know, that's turning woody, is way less fruitful than the younger growth. So we prune grapes pretty hard every year. Again, we do it in late winter, early spring. And what you want to maintain is that one-year-old wood, if you can find it, that's close to the trunk. But if you've got an overgrown grapevine, just start with taking out some of those older woody trunk-like branches that are higher up and leave the what I always call the pencil diameter chocolate wood, those are the fruiting canes that we want to preserve for next year, because that's where you're going to have the flower buds, and you can increase your production by concentrating more of those, you know, canes and getting rid of the old wood. And grapes are really challenging to prune and train, and it takes quite a while to kind of get them in balance. But if you're into growing grapes, you got to think about the trellising and the training and the pruning. So, don't be afraid to hack them back and keep some of that pencil diameter wood. If you're interested in learning about pruning grapes, I have one on my website through the Spooner Ag Research Station, Pruning Grapes.
And we should also make a plug for our state horticulture website, which if you just Google UW Extension Horticulture, you'll find it. But we have a lot of different publications on there that you can read online. You don't have to actually purchase them or anything. You can read them online. And there's one called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And there's information on our website elsewhere as well about how to go about pruning grapes for maximum production. And there's a couple different methods that people use, different trellising methods, but you can get a lot of great information there.
Well, that he fenced in his cedar tree, but the deer managed to push the fence down and ate the middle branches. Will they grow back, or should he trim off the bottom branches?
You know, in my opinion, with cedar, like white cedar, arborvitae, deer love it. That's candy to them. And they are really, really hard to keep protected from deer. They always, as they get mature, I always think they look like morel mushrooms because the bottom is all chewed away by the deer, and you've just got the kind of triangular portion at the top. If it's a younger plant, I would probably, you know, move that fence out and reinforce it so they can't get at it anymore, and then just let it go, because if they prune, if they chewed the branches back close enough to the trunk, they aren't going to sprout back out. But some of those lower branches might grow up and fill in. And so usually if it's a case like that, I like to give the plant a couple of years on its own to see if it can fill out and look better again, rather than going and pruning things. Because if you prune those lower branches off, then they're gone forever. Whereas they might grow upward some and fill in those blank spots. But that would just be my approach to it. As far as the health of the tree goes, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, it's not like the whole thing's going to die because it was fed on. It's a cosmetic thing, what it looks like to us, basically.
Let's see. Let's take a call from Carrie in Madison. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a scarlet maple, and I was listening to your show, and you were talking about the roots or the suckers on silver maples. The roots on my scarlet maple are, I think those roots are coming up above ground and they're sort of circling the tree. Can I cut those off? Is that the same thing? I mean, are they don't look like suckers. They're not growing anything off of them.
Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, so if you are seeing circling roots, especially close to the trunk, we really need to be careful that we're not setting ourselves up for girdling of that tree in future years. So I don't know how old this tree is, and I don't think there'd be any harm in trying to cut through those roots and at least stop them from going in a circle around the trunk. But this is where, you know, a site, you know, more information on what those roots look like. But circling roots around a tree are definitely not something we want to encourage. And no, it goes back to when it was planted.
Yeah, and those roots going around, every year those roots will get fatter, every year the trunk will get fatter, and then like Kevin mentioned, they'll strangle the trunk. So that tree's longevity is in peril. If you're in an area where you can contact a tree service, they do have some equipment and ability to come, and they basically like blast the soil away from the roots so that you get underneath and see what's actually there. And then they can selectively cut those roots so that that girdling process doesn't continue. But it's really, you know, you have to make sure that there's enough roots left to support the health of that tree. So you can't just like willy-nilly cut everything that you see, because that could be cutting off all of the tree's roots. So getting a tree service in there to blast away the soil, see what's happening, is an option. Depending on how old the tree is, then you can maybe do some corrective root pruning. But it is a concern. You know, when we plant a tree, we got to make sure the roots are pointing outward into the soil and not curling around. They might have been curling around in the container already, but they've got to get pointed outward. And maples, scarlet maple is a red maple, and maples are probably the worst.
The worst. they absolutely are. Diana Alfeth and Kevin Chesso, our guests today. And just a reminder, that survey, if you've learned something through the show, or what you learned through the show, you can take this little survey that we've got. You can also, part of that survey, tell us what else you'd like to hear on Garden Talk. And to do that, just go to WPR.org/Larry, WPR.org/Larry, and click the link at our program notes. Kevin's the Ag Development Educator for Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. Diana Alfeth, the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Diana Alfeth and Kevin Chesso back with us. Kevin, the Ag Development Educator for Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. Diana's the Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. Questions for them? I hope you'll join in. We have open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. So it's 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@WPR.org. Let's take a call. Mel in Middleton, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling, Mel.
I have a swamp oak, bur oak mixed tree that the city planted in the terrace after they took out an ash tree that was there. It's a real ugly-looking tree. It has roots coming off of the trunk all the way to the ground, and then I've got some shoots coming up out of the ground, and it looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree rather than anything you'd like to be looking at out your window.
So you want to make it look better.
Either that, or should I cut it down or have the city come and cut it down and replace it?
Yeah, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? I certainly can appreciate, you know, why you made the comments you did. And sometimes trees have very unusual growth habits and could get back to how the tree was planted. Sometimes if they're planted a little bit improperly, you can get strange growth coming off of the base with some of those suckers. And I don't know if, Diana, if that tree is known for aerial roots. I think about aerial roots as being another characteristic of some species and why they do it and that. So, you know,
yeah, and I don't associate that with any kind of oak. I will say that bur oak and swamp white oak, when they're young, they aren't super attractive trees. They tend to grow into their beauty. But if the city planted it, I would actually contact the city, have them come out and take a look at it, because maybe if there are roots visible above ground, maybe the soil settled or washed away or something. And if it looks that odd, I would have them come and take a look at it. Maybe, as Kevin said, it wasn't planted properly or something else happened. And, you know, it's kind of up to them to replace it or redo it or fix it, and just have them take a better look at what's going on there.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Good luck, Mel. Thank you. Dave and Nina, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I have some bridal wreath spirea that have gotten kind of leggy, and the deer have done a lot of damage to them in the past. Can I cut them back pretty severely and have them come back in the spring?
Yeah, so bridal wreath spirea gets a lot of stems from the ground, from the base. And the best way to be dealing with that kind of a shrub is that every year you prune back like a quarter to one fifth of the biggest, fattest branches all the way to the ground. And that stimulates new growth from the base, and it keeps your plant younger and healthier and more flowers and better shape and all that sort of thing. So if it's kind of overgrown and kind of old at this point, do not prune the whole thing back to, you know, like halfway, because then you get some really ugly branching and proliferation of foliage out at the base. But go in there and prune back about a third of them all the way to the ground. And like I said, that'll stimulate new shoots to come from the roots in the future and kind of rejuvenate the plant. Do the same thing next year and the year after, and then your shrub will no longer be any older than 3 years old. And then you can go ahead and nip off the tips of some of the other branches to shape it a little bit better. You can definitely reclaim that shrub, but don't just like shear it off halfway. That's one of the worst things you could do to it.
And that method you described, yeah, works well for lilac too.
Yep. Any of the shrubs have multiple stems coming from the base, so lilacs, dogwoods, help me out here, Kevin, some more examples. anything that gets a lot of shoots from the base, ninebark, service berries, that's the best way to do it. And again, it's better if you kind of keep up with it as the shrub is growing rather than waiting until it's kind of overgrown and ugly and then having to rejuvenate it. Yeah. But usually flowers and fruits, the stuff that we grow these ornamental shrubs for, forms on younger wood. And when the wood gets kind of old, like the lilacs you mentioned, Larry, then they stop flowering as much. So keeping it kind of young and vigorous is the way to go.
Dave, thanks again.
Yeah, and there's a wonderful kind of fact sheet on this topic, pruning deciduous shrubs. Dr. Laura Jull, who's our woody landscape specialist at UW-Madison, has an article on this, and she talks about some of these different pruning techniques. And this would be that renewal pruning that Diana mentioned that works real well on certain shrubs. So it's a pruning deciduous shrubs internet search, and put in the UW-Madison Extension, and you should find it. It's also on our Wisconsin Horticulture website.
And Laura Jull, by the way, will be with us next Friday on Garden Talk. So that's probably pretty good timing. She'll be talking about woody perennials. And so something to look forward to for next week, Friday. Lenny and Madison, we'll go to you. Hi, Lenny.
Hi there. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Good. I have a question about an apple tree. I've lost the top, the actual apple part. I think I'm just getting suckers and things coming up from the rootstock. I'm just kind of curious on if that rootstock is going to be a desirable tree. If it's, I know they're hardy for the apples, but just some ideas of what that could be.
Mm. Not good.
Well,
in a lot of cases.
Yeah, you're correct that this is, likely not going to be the variety that was grafted. Almost all of our fruit trees, you know, apples in particular, are grafted to a rootstock. So you get the variety, whatever that might be, is the top part. Once we lose that, we are now only getting regrowth from the base. Those are some type of crab apple. And we've got different rootstocks that are semi-dwarf or dwarf or standard. And some are proprietary rootstocks from the company that's selling or the nursery that's propagating. Others are more well-known that you can purchase for the purpose of grafting. But my guess is that, you know, that rootstock is going to, if you pruned them all out and let one or two of those suckers grow into a replacement trunk, you're just going to end up with a stubby, it could have lots of spurs on it, and it'll maybe have beautiful little apples or not. So you're probably best just to dig it out and replant something what you know. So yeah. It's unfortunate when we lose the top, but those suckers are going to just be some kind of crab apple.
You're not going to like it, Lenny. Terry in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a crabapple tree that's maybe about 5 years old, and the last few years I've had nice red crabapples on it. This year they're yellow. Did they just not mature?
It's not necessarily that they didn't mature, but weather conditions and temperatures and all of that can affect the pigments that form in them. So I actually am seeing it kind of a weird year for crab apples too. As I mentioned earlier, we have been in severe drought up here, and I have a crab apple outside my window that every year gets big red crab apples on it. They hang on all winter long. And then it's one of the things that I see a lot of the robins, the early robins come back, and they're out there eating the crab apples that have frozen and thawed and gotten mushier in the spring. And that's one of their food sources. This year, the crab apples on it are super, super tiny, and there aren't very many of them. And it's probably just because of weather and drought. So the pigments, it's just kind of like some years we have better fall color and leaves than others. I think that's all that's going on. It's not necessarily that they didn't ripen. It's just that the pigments didn't form to red this year for some weird reason. Probably best to blame it on the weather.
There you go, Terry. Thank you for calling. Ken in Beaver Dam, your turn. Hi, Ken.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a question about emerald ash borer. Does the tree have to be a certain diameter before it becomes infested?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't. So like Dutch elm disease doesn't tend to affect young trees. They have to get to a certain diameter before it seems to get in there. But with emerald ash borer, that's one of the problems. Those borers will lay their eggs on very small tree trunks, as well as the branches that are, you know, an inch diameter sort of thing. So there's not really any correlation to tree diameter with this pest.
Unfortunately. Jess and Nina, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I purchased a large box of fertilizer spikes specifically for pine trees. And I have beautiful pine trees, a variety of different types of pine trees all around my yard. And you're supposed to put them in around the drip line. Do I do that fall and spring, or can I just do that one time of the year?
Well, I would say, you know, the best time to put it out is when the tree is going to have access to it and need it the most. So, you know, when the tree is actively growing, you'd take advantage of those nutrients that are in those spikes. So, you know, doing it this time of year, probably not necessarily the best use of that fertilizer. You know, it's just not enough biology and enough activity to take advantage of those. So I would wait to apply those tree spikes during the growing season. You could do it in, you know, late spring, or you could do it, you know, earlier in the summer as well. So, you know, timing is, you got to think about when does the tree need it the most. And we're probably late enough in the fall that those tree roots, although they're still growing, they're probably not needing those nutrients near as much as they will during the more, you know, active growing season when they're leafing out and actively putting on new growth. So
There you go, Jess. Thank you for calling. Carol in Cedar Grove, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi. My question is, I have a fig tree that's about 2 years old. I put it out this year. I had it in a pot, and I was wondering, how do you protect that?
I'm sorry, what kind of tree was it?
Fig tree.
F-I-G.
Okay, so you're growing it like as a houseplant then?
I was, and now I set it outside this fall.
Well, I think you need to pull it back inside, don't you?
Yeah, fig trees aren't hardy here at all. So if you planted it actually in the ground, I think we're kind of going to have some concern with that making it through the winter. So getting it back in would definitely be the best option. Otherwise, you could try to treat it kind of like a hardy or a hybrid tea rose or something that's marginally hardy, where you can ideally wait until there's a little bit of frost in the ground, which of course is going to happen here in the next few days. And then you could do a bunch of mulching, winter protection, like with leaves or straw, something like that, to try to protect all the growing points and that, so that they don't get as cold as they otherwise would, and see if you can limp it through winter then. But that one's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, there you go, Carol. Thank you. Todd in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hello. We've got mixed trees on the property. Not a forest, but just pines and trees. And we've got a few dead, and there's some around the house that the birds really like, and the woodpeckers especially. We have no problem with the woodpeckers. They're not bothering the house at all. But I was wondering, is that going to compromise the health of other stuff around it if we leave the standing dead? I kind of like it, but what do you think?
Well, I would just be aware of the fact that if you've got dying trees, something caused those trees to, die. And if we do have a pathogen, i.e. a disease, for instance, and if it's likely to spread to other healthy trees, that would be my only concern with leaving dead wood. Is there a potential for disease if that's even occurring? So I don't know if you have any clue as to why those trees died. That'd be my first concern, is we don't want to be spreading, pathogens to other healthy trees that are in the area. So that would be one thing to think about. Otherwise, I guess, it's habitat for critters. We know they all need homes, and dead falls and dead trees are really good for all kinds of reasons, whether it be the woodpeckers that come and feed on them, or you get insects that burrow in there and they call that home. And, you're just providing more habitat and shelter for all kinds of ecology. So, I wouldn't be adverse to leaving them up. But just beware that they died for some reason. And if you know that it was not disease, it was some physical injury that caused them to die, then maybe, you're fine leaving them up.
Yeah, there you go. Todd, thank you, and good luck. Dot in Chippewa Falls, what's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question. They always say to put mulch down outside around your plant. But a lot of times the mulch, then more critters come in, like mice or other rodents, So I'm kind of wondering about that mulch. They always say to put mulch down,
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a really good question, and it does come up a lot. It kind of depends a little bit about the type of mulch that you're using. So if it's, light fluffy mulch like chopped leaves or straw, then the critters tend to like that. If it's like shredded wood mulch and it's only an inch or two deep, that doesn't really attract the mice that much because that's not a super good habitat for them. They actually would prefer to be in tall grass and building their little nests down in tall grass with a nicely lined, grass-lined nest in there and stuff. So whatever you put down the mulch, though, you don't want to put it right up against the trunk of a tree or the base of a shrub. So it should be pulled away, like at least an inch or two away, so that it doesn't hold moisture against that trunk, and which can cause rotting. And then that's also going to, you know, ensure that you don't have mice underneath the mulch right up against the trunk. But I don't think it's really as big of an issue as it's made out to be. At least I've not ever seen it in practice that putting like wood mulch around things attracts a lot of rodent issues.
Dot, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Roberta and Stevens Point has a nice patch of asparagus. They started from seed. They had nice ferning this year. Anything to do to protect them for over winter? She's in Stevens Point.
Yeah, asparagus, you know, as everybody I think knows, is a perennial, and every spring it resprouts from the base. So from the ground, the crown of the plant is where all the buds are for the little spears that come out. And that's what we harvest early in the season. And at some point, you know, you got to let some of those sprouts mature into some kind of, you know, frond with flowers and then the little berries and stuff. So we really don't really advocate that you do a lot. I mean, weed control is our biggest challenge with perennials like asparagus. So sometimes we need to get in there and remove the upper growth so we can get in there and do some weed control, usually early in the spring. But could be nice winter interest if you want to leave it up. I don't know if wildlife likes to feed on those little berries. I would assume so. But for the most part, you know, we're not too concerned about cutting those stalks back. At least I wouldn't be this time of year. Just leave them go and then clean it up in the spring would be kind of my recommendation.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything else you need to do winter-wise. You don't want to put heavy mulch over that those spears have to shoot up through in the spring. But asparagus is plenty hardy in Wisconsin.
It is indeed. And we're pretty hardy, too, I think.
Darn well better be.
Oh, thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. It's always fun to have you on. You're a great pair to have with us here on the Ideas Network. Appreciate it very much. Thanks, Diana and Kevin. Appreciate it.
Always happy to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah. Diana Offuth is the horticulture educator for Pearson St. Croix counties. And Kevin Chesso is the ag development educator for Extension in Burnett, Sawyer, and Washburn counties. And don't forget about our survey. We are interested in knowing what you learned during the show, and you can go online to WPR.org/Larry and click on the link on the program note. You can tell us what you learned, but we're also interested in what you'd like to hear on Garden Talk. So both those things are important. So again, just go online to WPR.org/Larry and click on the link on the program notes for today's date. Always a lot of fun to have them with us. Let's see, I mentioned that Laura Gell will be back to talk about woody perennials next Friday. And on Monday, Jesse LeGru will talk about how to browse the internet safely when you're away from home. Hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.